You've got to pet them so they can feel it.
Heavy petting on 95 BFM. Thanks to Pet Doctors.
Oh, I haven't heard that intro before.
You got to pet them so you can feel it, eh?
Hey, good afternoon, Cal from Pet Doctors.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. It turned out to be quite a nice day here in Auckland, which is always a positive.
Very nice. Well, I'm down in Nelson, where it's always lovely.
Okay.
All right. Humble brag. Is there a good pet population down there in Nelson?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I mean it's a growing little area, I guess, and there's plenty of pets here. Keep us busy.
Nice.
What's the pet of choice down in Nelson?
Yeah, I think it would still be cats. I mean, if you look statistically across New Zealand, cats just have the edge over dogs, I think, at the moment, in total numbers of pets, and I think it'd probably be the same here.
Cal, it's great that you've mentioned cats, because the first question we have is actually a cat one. My cat has licked a bald patch on her leg, and it seems obsessed by it. The skin looks fine. Should I be concerned? Or is it something I can treat?
Yeah, an interesting one. I mean, I guess the first thing to say is that probably, with cats in particular, but with most dogs and cat issues, when the skin, when they're over-groomed or licking at an area, you don't necessarily need to see skin changes or inflammation for there to be an underlying cause. You know, there could still be something going on there. Mm. And I guess, we really like to get, on top of these things before they get to that stage, because if you get to the point where a cat has licked so much hair away, that it's actually starting to damage the skin or cause irritation, then you've probably left it too long. And I don't know if you've ever looked at a cat's tongue. Have you ever looked at them? They're pretty remarkable.
All the time. I'm always looking at cat's tongues.
Oh, yeah, aren't we all? I mean, that's what I do.
Right above face.
But, they look a little bit like a Zoom groom or a hairbrush. I mean, they're actually, they're designed for cleaning the hair away. So they're quite remarkable. But, I guess the bottom line is that there's a bunch of reasons why cats will lick at a particular area. And interestingly, they tend to lick where they can reach easily, so it doesn't necessarily mean that the area that they're licking at is the area where the problem is.
They're lazy.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty flexible, but often you'll see cats that have licked along the side of the body or around the legs, when actually the issue is more generalised. And I guess the big one that we're looking out for at this time of year is fleas. You know, flea allergy dermatitis starts to kick off in cats at about this time of year. And interestingly, fleas need warm weather to hatch, so the eggs don't hatch until the weather gets up to about 17 degrees. And so, depending on whether your cat's inside a lot or outside, sometimes they're getting those temperature levels all year round, and a lot of people forget to flea treat over the winter, or think, I can kind of stop doing that, I don't need to do it this time of year because it's cold. But actually, the cat will still be building up fleas, and that's the classic cause of that grooming behaviour. So we'd certainly want to be having a look at that and making sure that the flea treatment history is up to date. Otherwise, we might be looking at whether there's any underlying infection present on the skin surface, and there are a few things in cats that can cause them to be grooming. And if it's not that, then we'd be looking for other issues. So sometimes it's arthritis, in a cat. They might be grooming at an area that's sore or inflamed. And in some cats, it can be anxiety. They can just be stressed or worried about life. And the classic default behaviour for cats is to groom. That, they're pretty sneaky little groomers, so sometimes you don't even see them doing this, but you just, you look at a cat one day and suddenly it's got, a mohawk.
You changed, man.
Which isn't a style thing in cats, not necessarily a good thing.
Is this maybe a potential for a cat to maybe have one of those space dog things on it, so we have a little space cat? Is that an option for a cat?
You mean like a bucket collar?
No, I mean a space dog thing. I've never seen a cat with one on, but I'm keen. I'm keen to have a look at it.
Yeah. I mean, actually, and interestingly, these days with cats, we tend to not use the traditional sort of bucket that people see in cartoons or on TV. And actually, a lot of vets now are using these soft collars, which are sort of like a fabric collar that sticks out, that's much better for cats because it just prevents them sort of turning around and grooming. But we want to know what
does it look like, a space cat, or
It's not as cool, but okay. they're often in quite cool colours, so you know they look pretty funky. Slightly embarrassing for the cat.
Oh, that's good. That's kind of what I was after. Okay, sweet. Nothing weirder than looking at a dog with one of those things on it and knows something's up. It's like, oh man.
The cone of shame.
Just a space dog. Yeah, it's like poor little bugger doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah. Yep. We've got to get to the underlying cause before we stick the collar on anyway.
It looks like we're going to get into a couple of old dog scenarios here. I mean, is 10-year-olds quite old, eh? Is that getting on?
Well, Jack Russell kind of goes to about 15 or more.
Dogs. So this one, breed dogs, you know, often live to 14, 16, 18 years of age.
Okay, so
for a big dog, that would be a problem.
So this is a case of maybe... can we teach a relatively old dog new tricks? We have a 10-year-old Jack Russell who gets separation anxiety. 1, 2, 3, everyone. Aww. Is there a way to manage it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Separation anxiety is actually quite common in our pets. And I guess as we involve our pets more and more in our day-to-day life and they're in our houses more and we attribute, you know, more human behaviours to them, we're making them fur babies, you know, they're more like our kids than they ever were, we do start to see some of these behaviours or behavioural issues emerging in these guys. So separation anxiety is a real classic. And we also see, you know, sort of phobias that develop around things like fireworks and those kind of issues. So there's a few ways of addressing it. And I guess the bottom line is that, you know, it's not a nice way to live. So even for a dog, you know, being constantly anxious or upset when the owner leaves the house is pretty awful. And, you know, we don't want them to stay in that state. So I guess there's a few ways of approaching it. One is that, there are veterinary behaviourists out there. So they're a little bit like animal psychiatrists. And they are, you know, fantastic. And they've got sort of additional qualifications to just the veterinary degree. And by all means, when you've got a dog with an anxiety issue, you know, while your vets are often really helpful, you'll often find that they want to refer you to a behaviourist who can dig even more deeply into the underlying roots for that behaviour. And they're going to want to sort of work with you through some exercises to try and break that separation anxiety issue. So, there's certain things that you can do that will help your pet cope with you leaving the house and give them ways of coping with you being absent from the house. And then sitting alongside that these days, we actually have medications as well that can be useful, but they want to be used in the right way. Mm. So often it's a matter of making sure that the medication is used alongside some of these behavioural type therapies. And that medication can be really useful at breaking down the anxiety that you're seeing in your pet. Really interesting, you know, that they're actually very similar medications to what humans use for the same issues, but obviously used in a slightly different way.
Well, they're probably tested on animals first, so it kind of works out pretty good in the end, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Animal testing is far less common these days than it used to be, obviously because we're changing the way we do those things. So it actually often tends to be almost the reverse, where these drugs become used in humans and then we see certain effects sometimes that we didn't anticipate in humans. And you know, clever people go, ooh, that's interesting. Maybe we could use that in the animal space and we could use it for some of these behavioural issues. So, there are some options out there. But I guess for someone with a dog like that who's got a really anxious, you know, behavioural issue, then speak to your vet. Talk about going and seeing a veterinary behaviourist, and you know, in conjunction with that behaviourist, you may be looking at using some medication. And some vets have really good expertise in this space as well, so you know, they may be able to help you.
Is this would this sort of just flow into the next question where someone's asked, do dogs get grumpy like old people? I've got an 11-year-old German pincher who gets really, really growly when I try to move him off the couch. Is there anything I can do to improve his mood as he gets older? Is this same line of discussion?
Potentially, although I'd be thinking slightly differently. So I guess with old dogs, there's a few issues. One, I guess, is, you know, behaviourally, sometimes it's just that they're reluctant to relinquish the throne. So, you know, there is a kind of behavioural
thing.
It's a power play. It's a Game of Thrones for dogs. Mm. So, you know, some dogs can be up on the couch and, you know, they see that as being a privileged position. You know, it's where you get to sit there for. If they get to sit there, you know, then for them that's quite reinforcing. And I guess some dogs will just be reluctant to give that position up. They don't want to leave it. But I think probably more likely in an older dog, we would be thinking about, you know, the potential for there to be something like arthritis sitting underneath this. So as dogs get older, they can start to get issues with spinal arthritis, arthritis of the limbs, particularly the hips and the lower the lower limbs in the hind legs, and that can mean that not only getting up on the couch, getting off the couch can be quite awkward or uncomfortable. And so they may make a bit of an effort to get up there, and then they're pretty reluctant to actually be pushed off and relinquish that position. Plus, the couch is really comfortable. You know, it's a great place to sit if your legs are sore or your back's sore. So if they don't have a better option, they're not going to want to give that up. And there's some great treatment options out there available for these guys. So, you know, some diets that have support supplements in them. There's some standalone supplements, things like Greenleaf muscle extract that are just fabulous for these guys. And there's some great anti-inflammatories, but I guess one thing to say is never use human anti-inflammatories in dogs because they are toxic to dogs in almost all cases. So, you know, go and talk to your vet about what the options are there.
Right. Maybe, you know, don't let the dog jump up on the couch in the first place. Maybe when it was 5 was a good time to stop it from jumping up on the couch. Now it's 11 and it's like, look, I've been doing this for 11 years.
So. Yeah, or get another couch.
This is true.
My parents would do that, actually. Get the dog a bed or a couch.
Yeah, we'll get another dog. I guess we can go either way about that one, couldn't we? Mm. Alrighty. Oh, we just got some chickens at our place in Oratia, and they're starting to molt. Why? I had no idea chickens molt.
Yeah, so I'm not a chicken expert.
You're not? You're right, mate. All right, we'll catch you later. No, you're
No, but look, they do molt, you know, and obviously, well, it's probably not obvious because they're asking, but when you have shorter days and the temperatures are cooler, then chickens obviously, that's the time of year when they like to molt, and it's a really normal behaviour for them to lose feathers and regrow. And they often stop laying during that time, and I guess it's a time when they're going to build up their nutrient reserves and they're actually sort of putting on a little bit of weight. They go off the lay and they go through a molt. And interestingly, most chickens molt from head to tail, which is sort of interesting as well. So they lose feathers from the head down to the bum and then they regrow these feathers from the head down to the bum as well. And I guess that's pretty normal, and you certainly shouldn't panic if your chooks are going through a molt, but it's quite important that you make sure that their nutrition is really good while they're doing that. So they need a lot of protein because feathers are around 85% made up of protein. That's an interesting stat for you. Use that at your next quiz night. So they need a lot of protein in the diet and they need to be treated fairly carefully. It's not a good idea to introduce other birds at that stage.
Maybe a good time to eat the chicken though, eh? If it's getting nice and plump and it's losing all its feathers, less plucking to do.
I get the feeling that these guys are not hanging with their chickens to eat them, but maybe. But yeah, look, you know, easy not to pluck them, eh?
Hey, Callum, I think we've got time to squeeze one more question in. Someone's got a pet budgie. He's pretty tame, and occasionally they're out to fly around the house. How important is it that the budgie gets out to fly around a bit each sort of week or day?
Yeah, and it's a really good issue, isn't it? I guess it raises a few interesting questions. One for me is the whole issue of welfare around birds in cages. And I guess, you know, part of the problem is, you know, over time we've kind of got used to the fact that birds live in cages, but actually behaviourally for birds, you know, they're quite deprived. And so I think it's a big concern that we have in this country is that, you know, birds need real environmental enrichment if they're going to live in cages. And that often means that they need a bunch of things that can keep them amused. They may need another partner or another bird. But, you know, solitary birds in cages always kind of worry me. And I think, you know, if you do have a bird in a cage on its own, certainly speak to a vet who's got expertise or experience in, you know, in avian medicine. It's a great clinic. We've got pet doctors at St. Luke's where they deal with exotic pets and birds. And, you know, that's what they do day to day. But they do need exercise. And interestingly, a lot of people don't realise that a lot of birds in this country, and it's not just, you know, confined to New Zealand, but we have a lot of fat birds, interestingly. So birds have a weight issue. And it's largely because we feed them a lot of rubbish. You know, these sort of seed bells that we're giving them are quite rich. They're often, you know, they're almost like a treat to them and they shouldn't be the sole source of nutrition. So if you've got birds that are just eating, you know, seed and not getting a balanced diet with other vegetables material, then often they're just getting a whole lot of fat. They get overweight, and if they're not getting exercise, then they get obese, and that becomes a problem for them. Or they get malnourished, and they actually lose weight and become unwell. So A, nutrition in birds, something that we really need to work on, and B, exercise in birds is great, and absolutely, you know, we would be really supportive of birds having the opportunity to get out and fly around a bit and do some normal behaviour, because it's just so important for them, and it's something we're not great at in this country. So
it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing, a bird in a cage, isn't it? So there's all sorts of metaphors going on there. I don't know if I like it. Is it? I mean, just on that, is it a good thing to clip the bird's wings, or are you better off just not clipping it and letting it fly around every once in a while? What's the...
Yeah, I mean, I guess the risk of clipping the wings is that sometimes it actually ends up in the bird harming themselves or doing damage. So if they do get out, they're unable to fly normally. And
there are
better ways of clipping wings than perhaps we did in the past, where you can remove just some of the feathers that allows the bird to fly normally without being able to sort of escape.
Or a bit of nylon on the leg kind of thing.
Yeah, no, not that idea.
Okay.
But, you know, increasingly we tend
I'm learning.
You know, and allow them to have normal behaviours and a normal life, yeah.
Right on.
Great.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Cal. Fantastic. Thank you to Pet Doctors. Always a pleasure. And we'll catch you in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks, guys. Talk in a fortnight. Right.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Is my cat too fat? Heavy petting on 95 BFM. Thanks to Pet Doctors.